Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Another small Massachusetts liberal arts college will shut its doors. Newbury College, a 625-student school in Brookline, announced last week that it's closing after the spring semester. For some students, this was a double whammy because they had been recruited from Mount Ida College in Newton, which closed this spring. 19-year-old Samantha Marshall, an interior design student, is among them. When Newbury approached her as Mount Ida closed, she says she asked Newbury College officials specifically about the school's finances, and she says she was assured that the school was on sound financial footing. In fact, Marshall says Newbury admissions officers referred her to the website GuideStar, which lists nonprofits' financial information. In an email, the admissions office said, quote, Newbury College carries almost no debt, which allows it to operate comfortably. Earlier today, we spoke with Samantha's mother, Barbara Marshall, who says her family, especially her daughter, are in shock.
She got her grades on Thursday night. She was thrilled. She got 4 A's and a B+. One of the teachers had sent her an email thanking her for her participation in class. You know, she was really, really happy. And the school waited until they were all on break to tell them, you know. And I think if they had known that they were in financial difficulty, why would they come and prey on Mount Ida students knowing that they had already gone through this once? You know, they only got 4 students from Mount Ida. She specifically asked if they were in any financial difficulty, and they said no.
After what happened at Mount Ida, did you look into the school's finances? Did you look into Newbury's finances?
I mean, we checked them out at GuideStar because it says, you know, gives their financials and says that there are no closures or mergers in the, you know, future.
And when did she get that letter from them?
April 17th.
And then when did she find out that Newbury will be closing after the spring semester?
Friday, after they all left for break.
So
I found out from the article in the Globe. And then she got an email.
The president of Newbury College, Joseph Chillo, you're probably aware that he told the Boston Globe that those comments in that email about the school's finances were not true. He apologized for that. He said he takes responsibility for that. But he also said the email was written by someone who would not have been briefed on the challenges facing the school. What's your reaction to that statement from Newbury College President Chillo?
My reaction is that admissions came to Mount Ida specifically to recruit students. My daughter asked a very specific question about their finances, and the person who responded by email said that they did some research into the subject and gave, you know, their financials and said that they specifically said that there were no mergers or closures in the near future.
Did you know that in March, Newbury President Chillo had publicly said that the school ran a $2.8 million deficit the previous year and was trying to close a budget shortfall?
I did not know that, no. So I also had 2 daughters at Mount Ida, so it was kind of a hectic, you know, we had to find schools for 2. And my other daughter was in the funeral program, so that was a mad scramble.
And where did she end up?
She ended up in Canton, New York, 7 hours away. Mm-hmm. At a state school in New York for more money because she's paying out-of-state tuition.
Did Newbury offer generous financial aid?
They did.
Well, some people might say, you know, a lot of small liberal arts schools are in danger, and they need to recruit as much as possible because that they're a business, too. I know that's not much consolation, but I'm trying to think of what they would probably say to defend themselves.
I think they should have told the truth when she asked the questions. You know, the admissions should have had that information.
What's your advice to other parents?
Look into the financial situation of any school, any prospective schools. I mean, and especially small liberal arts colleges.
And what do you think that they should have done? Mount Ida did close really abruptly. This is a semester notice on the part of Newberry College. I mean, does that help at all? Is there something they could have done to make it easier if they realized they just can't financially stay afloat?
I think if they knew that they were in danger of closing maybe last year, they should have made a plan with the Board of Higher Education, after seeing what happened with Mount Ida, make a plan to teach out the students that were there. She had just transferred into Mount Ida that semester when it closed. So this is her third school in three semesters. And the first one was by choice, but the second, you know, the other two were not.
That's Barbara Marshall, whose daughter Samantha is looking for another school to transfer to after Newberry College announced that it's closing after the spring semester. Listeners, we want to spend some time talking about this today, and we want to hear from you. What do you think about these schools closing? What's the fate of small liberal arts colleges? Could this situation involving Newberry College have been handled differently? Should there be more oversight? Or are colleges businesses, just like any other business? Do you think that that's the case? Or is there something different about higher education? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining us to talk further about this is Matthew Durr. He's president of Sterling College in Craftsbury Common, Vermont. It's a private environmental college. It has just about 100 students. Hello there, Matthew Durr.
Hello, good afternoon.
Also on the line from California is Talani Britton. She's an assistant professor at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Education. She also taught at Harvard about the economics of higher ed. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Deborah.
So, Matthew, I'm going to start with you. What do you make of the Newberry College Admissions Office communicating with the student whose mother we just heard from, with Samantha Marshall, and saying that the school was on sound financial footing and there were no plans for the school to close and there was no debt at all? What do you make of that? Now, we should say again, the president of Newberry College has apologized for that email, but what do you think of it?
Right, right. You know, it is a relationship that has to be based on trust, both in the Office of Admission, the trust that they're getting the information they need about the health and well-being of the institution financially and otherwise, so that they can sustain that trust as they go out and talk to prospective families. So, you know, any college president, any chief admission officer hearing Samantha's story would feel a sense of obligation and a sense of commitment that she should have had the information that she needed. It's, of course, one of the bigger challenges is that some of the small colleges are caught in a sort of catch-22 of trying to sustain their enrollment and generally relying on enrollment growth for their future. And that has to be done within the context of an ethical conversation within the institution, from the Board of Trustees to the president to those frontline admission people who are, frankly, often people who are out of college in their first year, out talking and promoting their own alma mater and believing deeply in its purpose. Hmm. So it's a complex relationship, but when it veers away from being based in trust, then bad things can happen. I have to acknowledge that I know very little about Newberry College and their circumstance, but I think within the National Association of College Admission Counselors, there is a deep commitment to sort of ethical behavior as colleges, all colleges, reach out to students about the characteristics of the places to which they're applying.
Right. Well, couldn't it have been, though, a misunderstanding? I mean, this admissions email from Newberry College refers Samantha Marshall, the student, to GuideStar.org, the website about nonprofits' financials, and it says, "I have done this research, Samantha Marshall. Look, we are on sound financial footing. GuideStar says that Newberry has a surplus of $2.6 million, and we are okay." I mean, it could have been a misunderstanding on the part of the admissions official who sent this email to give her the benefit of the doubt. And if that's the case, I'm wondering, where can people get objective, accurate information about a school's finances? And what is the school's responsibility to communicate that when, as you say, you know, they have to sustain their enrollment levels?
Absolutely, and there's the question both of the responsibility and the timing of information. For the most part, the tools that are out there for families are backward-looking. They look to past financial reporting, audits, 990s, information that may not be as current as the administration may have at their fingertips or may not have seeped into the conversations of the admission office if it wasn't directly part of the communication from the finance offices and the leadership of a college. So I think, you know, college is different than buying a product. I mean, we all have deep emotional connections to our undergraduate experience in particular, but a deep sense of belonging and connection. But having said that, I think that families are going to have to look closely at other characteristics, other qualities of an institution in almost real time to understand the whole picture so that they can enter into those conversations with admission officers knowledgeably and encourage the kind of candid communication that that they should be providing to families.
I want to say we spoke today with Barbara Brittingham, the president of the New England Commission on Higher Education, the accrediting body involved here, and she said, you know, this is a tough situation, but President Joseph Cello at Newbury College handled it, and the board of the school handled it as best they could. Let's listen.
These are hard times, and I think students and parents are becoming more sophisticated about looking at colleges that they may be interested in attending. The commission has increased its availability of public information about colleges, and certainly when Newbury College was placed on probation, that information was made public.
So I wonder, Matthew, saying that a school being on probation is public information, is that enough, and is that too much of an onus on the family here? I mean, are you saying, well, you know, you could have researched it and found out that the school was on probation? I mean, are there other steps that should be taken?
Well, I think that's a special category of a school, and I think that the accreditor is doing their work in real time in a way that is important to families, and that they're certainly protecting families from institutions that they think are in severe financial shape. And ultimately, the burden still rests with the institutions and with the boards and the presidents of these institutions to be clearly communicating about the financial health of their institutions. And I think there are ways, of course, that other criteria that could be more publicly shared with prospective students and families. And then there are matters of perspective and research that families themselves can do if they have concerns. You know, typically looking at characteristics like a turnover of presidents. So Sterling has had three presidents in the last 24 years. That kind of continuity and stability is an indication that an institution might be healthy. Looking at foundations that are giving, rather than individuals, but looking at foundations that are giving, that may be doing the due diligence they need to do in order mm-hmm. to make sure that an institution is healthy and thriving. And I think asking questions about growth and frankly, moving into conversations about where does the revenue come from that supports the operation of the college. If it's 90 or 95% from enrollment, then that institution is going to be really in a difficult spot. And I agree with Barbara Brittingham that these are difficult times, and Scott Jasek of Inside Higher Education certainly says these are difficult times, but not all small colleges are in retraction. Not all small colleges are under threat, and certainly there are some wonderful liberal arts colleges that, compared to big public universities, would be considered small that are elite and thriving. And so there's quite a bit of diversity out there, and with that diversity comes an opportunity for families to look more deeply into all of the characteristics mm-hmm. that might indicate financial health as well as financial vulnerability.
Talani Britton, I want you to sort of follow up on that. What do you think about threats to small colleges right now and what these closings, last I heard the statistic was something like 11 small schools closing every year. Are they under threat, or how would you describe it?
Yes, I mean,
I think it's a fair statement to say that many are under threat. To Matthew's point, I think it's also important not to indicate that all are under threat, but I do think that there are ways that consumers and families can find some of that information. One of them, of course, is the annual financial statements. One of the sort of things that I was struck by was reading Newberry College's statement that for the sort of fiscal year that ended June 30, 2017, buried in the notes, it said management acknowledges uncertainty remains over the ability to sustain the long-term financial stability of the college. So I do think that there's actually quite a lot of information in the financial reports. It is retrospective, and unfortunately, a lot of the burden does seem to be on the family. Some of the other sources of information are the Federal Student Aid website, for example, where they have what are called the financial responsibility composite scores, essentially a score that ranges from -1 to +3, and generally a score of 1.5 or above indicates sort of positive financial health. Mm-hmm. However, it is definitely not a perfect measure. And some sort of recent research has found that about half of colleges that closed received passing scores. In fact, Newberry did have a passing score.
Right. So did Mount Ida before it closed.
And so did Mount Ida, absolutely. So it is not perfect. And so essentially, I feel like given where many small colleges are in terms of some of the demographic shifts that we've seen, particularly in places like the Northeast, it really does behoove a family to do as much research as possible on the financial health of small, particularly less selective liberal arts colleges.
I want to take a call now, and I want to remind listeners that if you have questions or you want to weigh in on the situation of small liberal arts schools closing, you can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Ray is calling from Danvers. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, in the 80s, I was in a similar situation. The only difference was I was in a small school, Worcester County, Central New England College. It was an engineering school, associate's, bachelor's degree in various engineering disciplines. And there was an embezzlement problem there. And the school went down, and I guess I was lucky enough I was in the last semester, but I was really rushing to get this thing through. I would, you know, with some of these schools that being predatory and everything else, I would think there'd be a way that, you know, the schools could be bonded or almost like underwritten like an insurance company is through the Department of Education in such a manner that, you know, you're offering this, people paying money, there's got to be, you know, you go under, well, there's got to be an alternative or something, because there isn't usually the people pick these places because of convenience, they're working. That's the best alternative, and sometimes there aren't any other alternatives to these people.
Okay, well, let's take that question to Talani Britton. Talani, I'm wondering, you know, what about the accreditation process? And we know, for example, Newberry College was on probation, but it was still accredited. And if you're not accredited, it's my understanding you don't get federal student aid. So it's a big deal to be accredited here. Could there be some sort of mechanism in that accreditation process that might improve accountability or at least protect students?
Well, I think in some ways the accreditation process does have some built-in, once again, protections for students. However, it's not perfect, in part because you have to give institutions time to sort of rectify issues that have been found, right? So we think about the case of Newberry College. They were put on probation, but it was a two-year probation, which essentially said they had 2 years in order to rectify some of the issues that had been found. And so I don't want to say that probation is a death knell for institutions. However, I do believe that it is a warning sign that clearly things are not as they should be with the institution, and so that's something that families should take into account. The federal government does have some oversight, though I wouldn't say that they necessarily have sort of insurance program, but they do require things like letter of credits for schools that have composite scores that are below a certain number.
Mm-hmm. So where do you, I guess, what do you say to those students who are at Newbury College, students like Samantha Marshall and her mom, who we just heard from? I mean, what do you say to them about how they should move forward from this?
Yeah, I think that's a really a great question. In terms of moving forward, it really sounds like they're doing the best they can under the circumstances, and I would argue that sometimes institutions are doing the same thing as well, which is really to re-enroll in another school and ensure that the investment they've made in their education will actually be both complete and provide a return. I would absolutely suggest looking at the financial health of institutions, and beyond things like sort of websites and GuideStar, but really looking, unfortunately, into sort of the actual financial statements, which isn't very, I would say it's a relatively difficult thing for most people to do, right? These things are not written in layman's terms, but given the, as you mentioned previously, Deborah, the number of closures of particularly small, less selective liberal arts colleges, if that is the type of institution a student is seeking, then one of their best bets is really to do a lot more research on the school's financial position. I would also look at things like enrollment over time. We see Newbury College, you know, from the 90s to the present, a really dramatic decline in enrollment from 5,000-plus students to 620-something students. And so it really does require a lot of research on the part of families and students, unfortunately.
And why do you think we're seeing schools like this closing like this right now? What are two of the main factors behind this?
So I would say one of them is definitely the demographics. So just overall across the country, we've seen between about a 1 and a 1.7% decline in enrollment each year. There's been a fall in the fertility rate, certainly since the Great Recession. On the other hand, the relatively strong economy means that non-traditional students who are now a much higher percentage of students enrolled are no longer quite as interested in enrolling in college in this particular economy. So we're really seeing schools being pressed in a number of directions. Firstly, we see this sort of decline in the number of 18 to 24-year-olds who would enroll in college. And we're also seeing declines in the number of non-traditional students and an increasing real reliance on tuition at the same time that we're seeing these decreases in the populations who are even available to attend college. Mm.
Matthew Durr, last word goes to you. What would you say? I mean, how are you surviving in that environment? We've got a minute here. What's the main way that you're making sure that your school stays strong?
Focus on the mission, and we have a unique mission within liberal arts colleges, this focus on environmental stewardship and the critical issues of the day. I think the other variable here is, of course, borrowing and debt that colleges undertake to compete with other colleges. So knowing oneself, knowing your institution, and promoting it in a way that students can distinguish it from other liberal arts colleges is going to be increasingly important going forward.
Okay, Matthew Durr, president of Sterling College in Craftsbury Common, Vermont. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Also from California was Talani Britton, assistant professor at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Education. Thanks so much, Talani.
Thank you, Deborah.
Stay with us. Coming up, a new book about continuing the work of Elie Wiesel. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.